Good evening. Welcome. It's the group.
The stalwarts.
Yeah. Well, that's good because we can dive right in instead of doing the preliminaries. So, thank you for inviting me to join you tonight to talk about the four immeasurables. And in particular, the second immeasurable, compassion. I don't know much about compassion, so I was thinking, in my 40 plus years of teaching, I've never given a talk just straight up on compassion. So thank you for the opportunity. Yeah. It's very compassionate of you. I assume most of you were here last week for Bill's talk.
I actually missed that one, but I was at the Roland's first one.
And I missed that one.
So did you have a discussion of the meaning of the word immeasurable in this context?
No, not a discussion.
Okay, well, we won't tonight either.
That was a trick.
No, just kidding. Well, so this practice of the four immeasurables, I think it's useful to look at this notion of immeasurable itself. Because you probably already know that the practice consists of loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And there are sort of conventional forms of practicing with those four things, also known as the four Brahmaviharas. So why do you think in this practice we're talking about the four immeasurables? And I'm sorry, I'm really bad with names.
JD.
Yes. Christine.
Sherry.
JD. Sherry. Trudy. Eric. Carol.
No, Emily.
Emily.
Emily Carol.
Yeah.
Emily Carol.
I was pointing at...
Oh, you were. Okay. All right. Sorry.
I was pointing at Emily.
Bill.
Emily Carol. Sherry. Okay. So, J.D., were you going to...
Yeah, I have an idea of what I'm thinking about is, you know, in a conventional sense, we can work with it somewhat trying to, with the intention of working with it and generating more, but I think in this sense we kind of find that it's not in the conventional sense like money, you pay this much money, and now you have this much less. And with this, we find that there's an infinite store with us always. We can't run out. It doesn't deplete. The more we give, the more we find we have, and maybe it even self-generating, so to speak, where it's can't run out. And that's the immeasurable aspect of what I was thinking of. That.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Pretty amazing, huh?
Yeah, it is.
You actually think about it. Mm-hmm.
There is another aspect, too, I think, which is that as you look out into the world, there's sort of like no limit to the content of what you can engage with, like how many people you can love or feel joy with or have compassion for, equanimity, I'm not sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not even just people. It's like sentient beings or whatever. I mean, everything.
Everything, yep.
Yeah.
Without limit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so in this sense, it's actually transcendent. It transcends limits particularly conceptual limits. It transcends concept altogether. And so therefore, we're touching into something deeper inside of ourselves, which, as JT is saying, is limitless. It's infinite storehouse of energy that we can access, which in Shambhala we call wind horse. Mm-hmm. And so what does it depend on, the ability to connect with this limitless source?
Basic goodness?
Mm-hmm. It is basic goodness. And how do we, what is needed for us to connect with that?
We have to be in touch with our own basic goodness.
Right.
Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. And then we have to be able to actually not hold on to that, but open it in some way.
Connect with the basic goodness of other beings.
A kind of radiation, I would think, maybe.
And so what does this have to do with the first immeasurable?
Well, we're taking it beyond our own well-being or our own happiness. We're extending and wishing for others. So we've moved beyond trying to find some kind of liberation of ourself and putting others as important or more important than ourselves. Extending out to the aspect of that is.
That's the bodhisattva vow. Mm-hmm. Bodhicitta, right?
Yes. Which, that's completely true. That's in how we're kind of looking at it in terms of the four of loving kindness, compassion, mm-hmm. joy, and equanimity. That's kind of more compassion. But I was hooking it back to the first one mm-hmm. of loving kindness.
Seems like what Carol said. You have to have that basic goodness, have that love, and radiate it out. That might be. Wishing it all had happiness. When you get to the compassion, that it goes a little deeper because you're looking at and radiating compassion to suffering. Mm-hmm. That's how I just see that relationship kind of. You have one, then you have the other, or both at the same time.
I think loving kindness is like the bedrock on which everything else is built.
Yeah,
because like if you don't feel loving kindness for someone, how could you possibly have compassion for them? Because if you're like in a position of hating them or fearing them or just ignoring them or whatever, you're not going to be able to find compassion or anything else.
Yep. Yeah. And what's the root of having loving kindness or feeling loving kindness towards other beings?
Feeling it towards yourself?
Yeah. And what's that feel like?
It just feels like you're forgiven for all your foibles, kind of. At least
if you have any.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Always a catch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for me, that's what it is. I don't know what it is for you guys.
Yeah.
I was thinking about when you said wind horse, that's what it feels like when you actually sort of are at home with your basic goodness, then there's sort of this generator that starts
mm-hmm.
generating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For me, it's a really tender place.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very tender.
Yes.
Which then we take it on the road, you know, then there's tenderness towards others.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly. You know, I mean, there holds the possibility
yeah.
of that.
Yeah, very much so. That's kind of, that tenderness is where the rubber meets the road,
mm-hmm.
so to speak. Beyond sort of a glib blah blah about being kind to oneself or whatever. It's that real soft spot,
mm-hmm.
first for oneself and then for others. And I think that's very much connected to the word that Carol used, appreciation, like appreciating oneself. And Emily, you alluded to it too, appreciating even one's foibles. There's a bit of humor there, you know. Well, yeah. And so when you have that kind of appreciation and soft spot for yourself, then there's a this kind of trust that grows. And I think that's a real hallmark of loving kindness, is trust. We talk a lot about that in Shambhala training. Trusting oneself, trusting the environment. Like in level 3, level 4, trust plays a real key role. And so from that trust comes a sense of just openness, right? Sheer openness. And that really is what compassion is just raw openness. And along with that is a sense of radiation, like Trudy mentioned. And it's truly, this is one of my favorite phrases by the Vidyadhara, it's a radiation without a radiator. Makes no sense, actually. Radiation without a radiator, but that's the actual experience.
None of this really makes logical sense. I mean, how measurable, what?
Right.
You know, we're the bodhisattva vowel.
Mm-hmm.
There's no logic. It doesn't fit logic, not standard logic. So it goes right along with it.
Yes, it does. So the in this context, we can define compassion as the wish that all beings, and does all beings include ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It can't be polarized.
Right. It took me a long time to get that. It's like, oh, that includes me too.
Right, implicit in all this, there is a point, which is you have to feel like you are a member of the human race, not
right.
some being that's been beamed in from some other planet.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really crucial, because
mm-hmm.
otherwise you could never feel connected to anyone.
Yeah. So here, compassion is the wish that all beings be free of suffering, but not just free from suffering, but also free from the root of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Well, I always have thought that root of suffering was dualistic thinking. But that's just, I never heard anybody say that. That's what I worked out for myself.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe, and I don't mean just believe, but believe with all your being, that we are all one being, then any compassion you have for yourself or others, it includes all beings, because we are all one. So ego is not separate, but we think it is.
Right.
And so we think, oh, I have compassion for me and you. But if we are all one being, then compassion is all-encompassing. And there's nothing to cling to or reject or be indifferent to, because we're all one being. So I don't know, that's just my rationale that I worked out for myself.
Yeah. So, you know, what we're talking about right now is the first two noble truths, right? Suffering and the cause of suffering, also known as the root of suffering. And the cause of suffering is dualistic clinging.
Clinging to.
Especially clinging to this idea of self. So, what is suffering itself? Like, we use that word a lot, but what are we talking about?
It's like clinging to, there's pain, and then there's suffering, right? Mm-hmm. And suffering is clinging on to that pain and making stories about it and telling yourself about it and agonizing over it and trying to make it go away instead of being with it.
It can relate to general dissatisfaction.
Yeah, that's another translation for the word dukkha, which is the Sanskrit for suffering.
But then
it's also dissatisfaction.
I mean, if you look out of our world, there is, you can see suffering, and I don't think all of that comes from dualistic thinking or anything else. It comes from what's happening in the environment, what's happening to people around the globe, and that might all trace back to what we're talking about. But I find that a little hard.
Isn't it their view of what's happening that causes the suffering?
I don't know. Look at a burn victim. You think that it's just their view that's causing their suffering?
I think that's pain.
Yeah.
That's physical pain, but there's social pain. There's feeling ostracized. There's being ostracized.
I know, but I feel like sometimes we get too conceptual around what we're talking about. I know we're trying to get to the bottom of something, but
I think that's what he was talking about, the difference. Free from suffering might be the suffering of a burn. I think somebody just mentioned that, and helping with that burn. But then the other part is what we were saying, the root of suffering is slightly different than actually taking care of the need at hand. Mm-hmm. Right? Isn't that kind of what we were... suffering and the root of suffering.
Well, let's take a larger view here.
Do we have to?
Suffering is the six realms of existence. The realm of the gods, jealous gods, humans, animals, hungry ghosts, and hell beings. And all six of those realms are populated by beings. Beings that believe that they are a being. Beings that have a body, one form or another. And so, you know, someone who's a burn victim, that's the suffering of having a body that you've reincarnated into, because you believe all this is real.
Maybe you believe all this is real.
I was going right along until you said, until you believe all this is real. You mean the burn victim believes the body is real? Or do you mean...
Well, I mean...
You believe that and therefore you're reincarnated? I'm kind of getting confused, I know, but I'm also...
It's related to the
chant. I'm thinking about how you would talk to somebody about.
Well, you can't just talk to somebody about it because there's a very big background to this, which is, you know, we're talking about karma right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're talking about taking birth in a realm. We've all taken birth in the human realm, mm-hmm. with its various sufferings. And so, you also have to look at the causes of us taking birth in this realm. You know, which is that, I mean, we all believe this is real. And when we entered the womb, we wanted to take birth in a body. I mean, this is the Buddhist understanding mm-hmm. that I'm talking about here. I don't remember this myself, but, you know, there's a chain of nidanas, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a certain desire, certain impetus that has a background of habitual clinging to a body. Having a body of some kind. I've thought about this sometimes, you know, like when I die and mm-hmm. don't have a body anymore. Mm-hmm. It's like...
it's what just, now?
Yeah, right. It's very challenging to think of that. Mm-hmm. You know? So
relates that in one of the chants is always wanting there to be another now. This is all tied into that, or maybe that's all that's mm-hmm. tied into all of this. You know, if you don't have a body, you really want a body, so you get reborn, you know, or you get burned, and you don't want it to happen. You know, it's always wanting not what you have right now. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the suffering. Mm-hmm.
I get uneasy sometimes when we talk this way, yeah. because, like, I fear. It sounds like that we are a bunch of privileged white people who are so well off that our problems are just due to not thinking straight. Like if you're a black guy, you go out, you worry about a cop killing you because he looked at you wrong or something. You know, that seems like a different category of suffering somehow.
I think that's kind of what I was trying to say, that
yeah.
if you don't know all of this, there's still suffering. And it's very dependent upon you completely wholeheartedly believing the Buddhist teachings. But if you're not, mm-hmm.
So
it's just
yeah, maybe
a
what you were saying,
in terms
yeah,
of how to be in the world.
Some suffering does not appear to be caused by having muddled thinking. I mean, there is some mm-hmm. suffering that is not that, I think. So, mm-hmm. Is that? And that just makes me uneasy. I don't know what to do with that. Yeah.
I mean, it's a cinch. I probably wouldn't want to be born in a black body because I might feel like suffer more. Do you know what I mean?
That's just another version
yeah.
of
yeah.
the basic suffering we're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, that's. I guess that's not clear to me that that's just so. So I'm not going to start an argument about it. It doesn't immediately appear true.
I'm a little confused.
Yeah. We say things that, you know, suffering is caused by bad thinking. And what I'm raising is that some other suffering is
we're not
part of that.
Not actually saying that.
Okay, so that's what I heard, but I heard it incorrectly.
It's, the root is ignorance.
Yeah.
And it's that's much more than bad thinking. Ignorance is believing that, or you know, believing that you exist as a being separate from anything else. Whether you're black or white or...
So are you saying ignorance as a passive thing, like I don't happen to know this information? Or ignorance as an active thing about I choose to turn a blind eye to this?
I think that's my problem. Just in general, it's words. I don't know how you could talk about these things without the words and the ideas and the layers. The whole...
It's the part I think is that separation and the ignorance of that is not like you're bad because you have that ignorance. It's a natural part of being human and having an ego and surviving. And we tend to, I would think each one of us in this room have done that, where we think we're, but by... As we start suffering, at least for myself, as I started suffering more and more in my life, I was looking for relief. And that's when I started this and other practices, because I was realizing that I had something to do with this suffering. And that's when the first hole of ignorance may have dissolved and I started looking through that. But I think that's the kind of ignorance we're talking about, is that it's not one person's ignorant and one's not. It's that we were all ignorant.
Right. And ignorance is blind to race or gender or anything like that.
We have started to, hopefully through these practices, we're starting to discover some relief from that suffering, and that would be available to anybody. Mm-hmm. That's the type of suffering. I think we're part of the freedom from the suffering that we're talking about that would be available to even a burn victim or a black man being assaulted, not as easily or immediately maybe, but it would be available.
I'm still stuck because I know people who are not Buddhist who think their karma is such that they have every much as chance as me as having another human birth.
I think I like the comment or the slogan of all dharmas agree at one point that yes, that no matter what you do, you have that possibility of making the same discovery in different terminology or different methodologies. But yeah, that's available to everyone, no matter what.
I guess my thinking is, who cares? I mean, we know suffering, what suffering is, and so I'd like to talk about response to suffering rather than intellectually, you know, is it karma, is it ignorance, is it not, you know, it's there's suffering, so
right. Well, I think we're approaching, you know, what is the cause of suffering. I'm not sure that that's all that clear.
Mm-hmm. But the causes,
yeah.
What I'm saying is, who cares? What difference does it make what the cause is? If there's suffering, and how can we help alleviate it? That's
well, you know,
the third noble truth is the cessation of suffering, which is dependent on understanding what the cause is. You can't undo suffering without knowing how it's created.
Impermanence striking again. You could knock it along for a little bit, but it's going to come back, unless you get rid of the cause.
That's the idea here, anyway. But, Sherry, maybe you're making the point that we don't want to get too, like, an ingrown toenail about the whole thing either, right?
Because it just gets up in your head and it's already gone. So, I mean, you know, the real feeling of compassion isn't any kind of, like, you just feel it, like you feel a softening towards yourself, and then there's some, I feel kind to people, and it doesn't last, but But if I feel, if I've gone through something that's really been intense, and then I feel some kindness towards myself, and then I'm really there for other people on a different level, you know. But that's nothing up here. I don't have any ideas about that, and that's as far as I can go with all this. I mean, and I'm interested in what causes suffering, because, yeah, I mean, I'm interested in that because, I mean, but for me, it's like, it's, I don't know if it's what they say it is, but for me, it's like not being okay with who I am or what I am, or thinking I should be some other way than I am.
And that your situation should be some other way than it is.
Not so much my situation. It's just like I'm having this rough feeling, and it's wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, that somehow this doesn't fit into the grand scheme of how I should be. Mm-hmm. Or something.
So yeah. So to Sherry's point, you know, not to get too lost in the weeds. We all have a feeling for suffering, and you know, I think one of the a very powerful analogy for compassion that I found in Patro Rinpoche's words of My Perfect Teacher is that it's like a mother that has no arms watching her baby being swept down the river. Mm-hmm. That helpless feeling.
There you go.
And, you know, so seeing... seeing others suffer, you know, brings out that feeling of, ooh, there's a certain helplessness. Mm-hmm. Like it touches you. Mm-hmm. There's that kind of touches your tender heart. And that's dependent on the fact that our basic nature is basic goodness, is that clear, I mean, from another perspective, in another Buddhist tradition, the mind itself is defined as clear, that which is clear and aware. And you could say that that is a definition of basic goodness. Clarity and awareness. When you have clarity, things can touch you, and you can touch things, which is very much what level 4, awakened heart, is about. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, in looking at this stuff, we're, on some level, we're really looking at fundamental things, like what is our mind? What is our heart? And one way to look at it is that fundamentally mind or heart, the word citta means mind or heart, as in bodhicitta, awakened heart, awakened mind. The fundamental mind consists of two things, the fundamental heart, which is prajna, or superior seeing, like clear intelligence, and compassion. So prajna and compassion is like two wings of a bird. And those two really go together. And you can see in different people kind of emphasize one or the other. You know, a strong intellectual approach to the Dharma has a lot of prajna, maybe not so much compassion. Mm-hmm. Or someone who is very approaches their world with a lot of heart, but not a lot of discrimination, kind of more the compassion side. But both these are really fundamental to our mind and our being.
I somehow have the idea that we start the four immeasurables with all these concepts,
Mm-hmm.
But the practice takes it out of the realm of conceptualization, so it mm-hmm. becomes something something else.
Yeah.
So you actually sort of learn what these things really are, but it's not a concept anymore. Mm-hmm.
It's an experience.
Yeah, it's all experiential. Or concepts sort of get us started.
Yeah.
And then we go from there.
Yeah, that's the basic three prajnas of Buddhism. There's learning first, then there's contemplation, where you engage mm-hmm. with the learning and chew on it and bring it into your being, and then there's meditation, which is where you just are experiencing that or being that. Yeah, so very much so. Yeah, the concepts are like training wheels.
Mm-hmm. That really, I mean, it has to be, because, you know, this notion of immeasurable, as I said, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Logically or conceptually, it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to go beyond that.
Yeah.
Yeah. To figure out what it really is.
Yep. And so at some point, compassion is very much connected to putting other before self. Mm-hmm. One time, apparently, the Vidyadhara said something like, I don't know the exact quote, but it's something like, if you want to be like me, then care for others and forget about yourself. He said, you know, this is the most fundamental thing about me. If you want to be like me, do that. That's it.
Yeah.
And since we are not really separate, when we care for others, we also care for ourselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're not separate in a scientific sense. There's nothing conceptual about it. It's factual.
Right. But if we think that way, feel that way, behave that way, is another matter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, yes. So I'd like to do the practice, so we don't kind of go around and around with the concepts.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's helpful to kind of know the context of all this. And, you know, another important aspect of everything we're talking about here for a Buddhist is that, you know, really we're talking about emptiness here. Emptiness of our preconceptions, emptiness of our clinging to self-identity, emptiness of clinging to things. It's one thing to have some realization of there really is no self here. It's another thing to know that there's no objects either. No eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind. Right? That's pretty revolutionary. But that's kind of the wellspring or the source of true compassion. Because true compassion has no reference point back to oneself. And so it's said that there's no giver, there's no receiver, very much what you were saying, Carol. And there's nothing given either. The three emptinesses, you know. So it's not sticky in this sense. And In one of my readings, the Vidyadhara made a very interesting point about that in true compassion, you don't give up your nobility. You don't kind of wade right in and get all involved necessarily. You might, but you maintain your dignity, your nobility, your own strength in any given situation. And it's most definitely not, oh, poor you, I'm going to help you. I'm going to help you, you poor little thing. You're just engaged. But you have that, you maintain your seat within that, which is pretty cool. Well, let's do the practice.
Is everybody cool enough? Because I was thinking maybe I'd turn up the temperature on the AC.
Turn down the temperature.
I'm fine either way.
I'm okay.
You mean make it cooler or warmer?
Make it, just turn, so it, is it constantly coming on and
off? Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
Because then it bothers me when we're trying to do the practice.
Very quick anecdote. The German word for compassion is Mitleid. Mm-hmm. And I have Wagner's opera, Parsifal, which that word comes up a lot, Mitleid. And the version I have, they translate it as pity, which makes me want to just scream, you know? Because compassion is not the same thing as pity at all.
No, not at all.
So anyway.
What is it?
Mitleid, which is literally like feeling with, which is compassion. Mm.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because I think a strong aspect of compassion is empathy, where you actually feel another's situation or suffering, and you just naturally want to help because you actually feel that.
Yeah.
Mitleid. Huh.
Not quite kind of brings us back to where we were, right? On some level, it kind of relates to, it helps me relate to my confusion.
Mm-hmm. What does?
The idea that you feel something in you.
Yeah.
That. Mm-hmm. With dignity. That's the part I've been trying to learn.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah.
But you know, when I was taking that compassion class that they give at Naropa, one of the points that they made about brain research is that there actually is a difference. The functional MRIs show that different parts of the brain are activated for compassion and empathy.
Oh.
Some of the same parts, but additional parts for compassion that are not part of empathy. And some of the parts that are active for empathy are not activated for compassion.
Mm-hmm.
So they are actually different.
Speaks to balance of some kind then, or integration.
Mm-hmm. We had a Zen social scientist or whatever, kind of that. He was a neuroscientist and a social something or other, but he said a similar thing. He said that in the studies that empathy was feeling someone else's pain or whatever, but that you're actually feeling it, and then compassion was wishing to do something about it help with it.
You feel it, and then you take it a step farther.
Right.
Maybe using your prajna, I'm starting to get something
happening
in my little head. Something's happening.
Little wings.
Great. All right. So let's recite all four first together, and then we'll do the first immeasurable, of loving kindness. And we can do this silently. How'd you present this last week, Bill?
We just read this at the beginning, before when we first started this.
I mean the practice itself, when you did the practice with everybody, how did you instruct them to do that?
Essentially, I told them to either use yourself or somebody that you can actually generate loving kindness really strongly for. So, and start there.
Okay, so I'm going to kind of do a graduated thing here.
Mm-hmm.
So, so for this first one, for loving kindness, let's, when we get to that practice, let's just simply say to ourselves, may I enjoy happiness in the root of happiness. And just repeat that. Like I'll say it out loud,
mm-hmm.
and then you can repeat that to yourself periodically. And just kind of feel that. And then may someone I deeply care about enjoy happiness. And then may someone I don't really care one way or another about enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. And think of someone, like bring up somebody that you really kind of see here and there, but don't really pay much attention to, or, you know, could have been the Sprouts clerk this afternoon, or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's someone in the office that you don't really have much of a connection with.
That is what you did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what you did.
Yeah. And then may someone I have difficulty with enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. And then we'll do that with compassion as well. All right. So let's recite all four first. May all sentient beings enjoy happiness and the root of happiness.
May they be free from suffering and the root of suffering. May they not be separated from the great happiness devoid of suffering. May they dwell in the great equanimity, free from passion, aggression, and prejudice.
Three times.
May all sentient beings enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. May they be free from suffering and the root of suffering. May they not be separated from the great happiness devoid of suffering. May they dwell in the great equanimity, free from passion, aggression, and prejudice. May all sentient beings enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. May they be free from suffering and the root of suffering. May they not be separated from the great happiness devoid of suffering. May they dwell in the great equanimity, free from passion, aggression, and prejudice.
May I enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. May I enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. Really feel this, that you wish for great happiness and the root of happiness for yourself. And now, may someone I deeply care about enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. You can say their name to yourself. You can also do more than one if you wish. Someone I deeply care about enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. Maybe someone I don't really care about one way or another enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. Now, may someone that I find very distasteful, that I don't like, that I have a hard time with, or gives me a hard time, may they enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. May my enemy enjoy happiness in the root of happiness. Now, may I be free from suffering and the root of suffering. May I be free from suffering and root of suffering. Now, may someone I deeply care about, a good friend or partner or spouse or mentor, may they be free of suffering and the root of suffering. Someone I deeply care about be free of suffering and the root of suffering. May someone who I haven't really noticed so much one way or another, someone I don't really care that much about or feel connected with, may they be free of suffering and able to suffer. Someone who I detest, who I dislike, who feels like an enemy to me, may they be free of suffering and the root of suffering. May someone who's pretty much wrong about everything, who I can't stand, may they be free of suffering and the root of suffering. So time's up, but maybe we can just take a couple minutes to share what that was like for you. What stood out the most for you in the practice?
My breath, it was different. It changed with the different, it seemed like there was a little more concentration on in-breath when that was high. A little more concentration on out-breath. I mean, I just kind of felt shifts in my breathing.
Mm-hmm. And that was related to the practice?
I thought so, yes. Mm-hmm. Because it felt a lot like Tom Lin often, mm-hmm. in a certain kind of way.
Mm-hmm. Right. I really like the people I didn't care about.
Mm-hmm.
It's so nice to have a connection with them. Mm-hmm. Instead of just whatever. Far more interesting world.
Yeah, it's kind of the ones I really didn't like are it was kind of like I needed to go past their brain a bit and just what it must feel like to be them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what they're trying to avoid in themselves maybe, or it's just like how they must feel. It seemed kind of sad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I felt connected to that.
So. It lets them in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where normally we push them out. You know, when you think of somebody you don't like or you really dislike, it's a pushing away.
Right.
Where this opens up, lets them in.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
That's very different.
That's the best way to put it. Yeah.
Understood. It was somewhat leading to equanimity in that I noticed that not much difference between what I was wishing for all the enemy or the neutral or myself, and I could notice that particularly in reflecting on the root of suffering, it was kind of a flicker back and forth of a realization how much I really don't want to give that up.
Mm-hmm.
Clinging to myself and how mm-hmm. I don't, the foibles, I thought about the foibles of how much I don't want to embrace them and let them be. And, so there's several things like it, and it's kind of fading, but what I would say was I noticed the similarities of myself and others, and some insights that I doubt they're going to stick with me very long, but I hadn't. If you don't believe me, I can't prove it. It felt like it, though.
How about you, Sherry?
Well, I was thinking, or sort of realized, I often do the neutral person, somebody from King Soopers, and checker, bagger, and then when, and so now when I gone to King Soopers and see that person, I kind of feel a little connection with them that wasn't there before.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah.
It wasn't specifically today. I was kind of,
mm-hmm.
But I was aware of that there is sort of a shift, you know, an openness, an expansion,
mm-hmm.
and a connection with someone who otherwise had no connection.
I was thinking about telemarketers.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Is neutral? Or? Okay.
I was hoping, you know, maybe to put it down to neutral, but because they're just people.
Yeah.
But they're so irritating sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah, I was thinking of Rudy Giuliani. Giuliani?
Giuliani.
Giuliani. Yeah, I mean, his face is just so... Every time I see his face, I'm like, oh. And it's like, okay, let's do it with him.
Yeah, it's worse if you had to live in the city where he was the mayor when he was the mayor.
Oh, did that happen to you? Oh, God. Anyway, yeah, so he was challenging.
Yeah.
I also realized that it's good to have the introductory stuff for this because when I started the first one, I flashed on when I was a kid, and get your catalog from Sears and you go through it to look at what you want for Christmas, and that was happiness. And then it's so different from what we're doing here.
Yes, you are.
Yeah. Just related to what Sherry said about it. I've done a, not always, but sometimes I'll try to connect with a neutral person. And sometimes the fact that I just caught their eye and said thank you or something just blossoms. Mm-hmm. And sometimes not. Like woman's day was just, I think she was tired, mm-hmm. you know, and just didn't rise to anything.
Right.
And that's okay, you know.
Yeah, I've made a habit of just, you know, the checkout clerk just asking, how's your day going?
Yeah.
Which sometimes I really don't feel like doing. Because I just want to get my stuff, get out of there. But I make myself do it. Because it is a way to connect. And usually it's something happens.
Yeah.
Usually if you seem somehow to notice the person, then mm-hmm. there's a little interrupt. Yeah, they're just doing their
right.
thing.
Yeah, it's unusual for them because 99% mm-hmm. of the people...
Mm-hmm. Like literally don't even catch their eye. They just take their cup of coffee and go away or whatever.
How are you today? Oh,
yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Right.
All right, well, we should wrap it up because it's Ooh. After 9.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah.
And so next week is...
Eric. Sympathetic Joy.
Number 3.
I must say, your talk tonight has caused me to kind of like tear up and sort of with my screen, which is great. So thank you.
You're welcome. And I just want to mention that, you know, we kind of touched on the root of suffering, and
mm-hmm. yeah.
It's way beyond the scope of this class to go into that in any deep way. It, you know, it's a very extensive discussion, really, but, you know, essentially, from the Buddhist perspective, the root of suffering is understood is the belief in a separate self. Mm-hmm. That through that belief, then all of that is what is referred to by ignorance. Ignorance isn't just like not knowing what the weather is outside. It's much, much more profound and deep than that. And there's even different types of ignorance as far as this goes. But it's very fundamental to us as sentient beings. Like, sentient being, by definition, is ignorant. Mm-hmm. Has ignorance. Not is ignorant. Has ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
Right.
I read something a while back that it's related. It was a story about a person who died. And this being of light comes to lead him to his next incarnation in 1850. It shocks me. He says, wow, does this happen to everybody? And the other being answers, there is no one else. So it's, yeah, here we are. I liked it. Anyway, can we dedicate the merit?
Yes, let's do that. By the
Spirit, may all obtain missions, may it defeat the enemy wrongdoing from the stormy ways of earth, the lace, sickness, and death. From the ocean of samsara, may I free all beings. By the confidence of the golden sun and the gray east, may the lotus garden of the radiant's wisdom bloom. May the dark ignorance of sentient beings be dispelled. May all beings enjoy profound, brilliant glory.